back to another episode of Cinema D'Amore. I am Justin Morgan. I'm here with
James Reinhardt,
Chuck Phillips,
and we're continuing Chuck's theme of movies that came out in 2020. I don't know if it's particularly great movies because we started throwing in just other things, and we're definitely doing Tenet next Friday, and I think that's already kind of mixed.
Yeah, I'm this could be an interesting discussion on that one
for sure.
I have yet to watch it.
Very curious to hear your thoughts.
I'm the last to see it. But today we're going to talk about Beastie Boys Story, which came out in 2020 on Apple TV Plus, right? That what it's called?
Or yeah,
it's called Apple Plus. Apple TV Plus.
Yeah.
It was supposed to come out in theaters and like a limited IMAX, but the pandemic ruined that, so that never happened. But yeah, I mean, I think this is like kind of a nice, it's a good companion piece to, there's a book that came out called Beastie Boys Book in 2018. And I think that's kind of what projected, like pushed this movie into motion somewhat. But I talked about this, not this movie. I don't think the movie wasn't out yet, because it was, I think, July of 2019. I was on our friend Nick's podcast and the Geeky Nerd podcast, and I did an episode on Beastie Boys, and the book had been out. The movie did not come out yet, so I think it was 2019. But that's like maybe a good companion to this episode that we're about to do. But I know there was some confusion because I had recommended the Beastie Boys book, and it is literally just called Beastie Boys book. People were like, what's the name of that Beastie Boys book? I'm like, it's just Beastie Boys book. To be confusing, I guess. Or simple. Oversimplistic, maybe.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is a... it's kind of a documentary. It's a little bit of a seminar, like a TED Talk.
The TED Talk, yeah. That's
what I was yeah. Thinking. A little bit of both. I know Spike Jones directed this the year before. He had done an Aziz Ansari like special, so I guess it kind of, you know, he just kind of pushed that forward a little bit. I don't know if I saw the special, so I don't know if it incorporated like anything documentary-esque into it, because this movie was something that they recorded live in Brooklyn. They did like three shows. I think before they did it, they kind of did like a one in Philadelphia as like a rehearsal of sorts. And they kind of went off of some story, like selections of stuff that was directly out of their book. And but I thought it was really good. I've become a fan of Beastie Boys over the last couple years. And I think the reason that I kind of like, I generally like their music because it's something that is, it has a little bit of everything that I like in it, like hip hop and punk rock. And funk, I don't know, like I like a good funky tune. But when I didn't read the book, I listened to the audiobook, which I also highly recommend because it's narrated by literally every person under the sun, like Steve Buscemi, Ben Stiller, that are in this movie, they narrate stuff, and Rachel Maddow, John Stewart, Snoop Dogg, like there's so many damn people in it, and it's just fun to listen to all of them narrate a different chapter. So that comes highly, highly recommended. But I kind of like the growth of this, how this story, how their story kind of pans out. Their career is essentially over. You know, they ended it when MCA passed away in 2012, and I kind of really appreciate the growth that happens in this, like over the course of their lifestyles. Like they really change for the better. And it's just like a very interesting, like, I guess, cycle of life.
What
did you guys think about it?
Well, I'll be honest, and I feel really bad saying this because I know how much you love the Beastie Boys. And I know how much you said you loved this movie. You just said it again at the beginning of this podcast. But I was bored to tears during this. And I felt bad because I was like, oh, I know Justin loves this and he wants to talk about it. But I was not really that into it. But there were aspects of it I did really like. Like what you brought up, the, you know, kind of showing their evolution. That was probably, to me, the most interesting aspect of it is, you know, they're now like grown, like middle-aged guys kind of looking back on their life starting from their teen years up until, you know, now, and kind of reflecting on their mistakes and history and you know, and victories, as well as, you know, what, you know, got them to where it is. And I thought that was probably the most interesting thing, is like kind of watching them grow up before your eyes while they're essentially like they're giving a PowerPoint on themselves pretty much.
You don't have to feel bad for not liking the movie. But yeah, I mean, I feel like it's well described when I say it is like a TED talk, like a hip hop TED talk of sorts. I think that the movie too, what is it? Like, it's like 2 hours long.
Yeah.
Maybe the first 30 minutes or so, it takes about 30 minutes for them to kind of get into their, into their comfort zone, I would say. And I think it takes like maybe that long for the story to kind of like pick up. I don't really know what were you expecting?
I guess for me, because you said it was a Beastie Boys documentary directed by Spike Jonze. So I think I was expecting more of a traditional documentary. And then when I was Googling it to see where, I didn't know it was on Apple TV. So I just Googled to see where to watch it. And I saw a few reviews and I read a few of them. And I, like, one was a pretty negative review. It's like, oh, you're just watching a PowerPoint presentation. And I'm like, oh, that's kind of weird. Then I watched it. I put on the movie. I'm like, oh, that review wasn't exaggerating. So I just think it was mostly the format type where, you know, it's just kind of watching them. You're in the audience watching them give this, you know, this presentation on themselves. So maybe it's just a way it's just a presentation of it. I wasn't that into, but I also, you know, knowing how much you like this, I feel like I like the Beastie Boys, but I don't really know anything about them, and I'm not. I wouldn't say I'm a big Beastie Boys fan, but I feel like, you know, if this was about like one of my favorite bands, you know, like Foo Fighters or Blink 182, I would probably have I'd probably have a reaction much more similar to yours, where I would, you know, find it really emotional and engaging. But that's kind of like, I think we all kind of have this emotional attachment to music and the artists and, you know, how they make us feel something. And I feel like maybe because I didn't have that emotional attachment to this, that also is probably why I wasn't as engaged with it as I, you know, thought I would be.
I mean, you saw everybody in the audience. They are all like 40-year-olds.
Yeah.
It's a very specific audience. Yeah, it is definitely not like anything that Spike Jonze is known for. His last movie was Her, which was the Joaquin Phoenix and wasn't it Scarlett Johansson?
Scarlett Johansson.
Is she even in it? She's just a voice.
Yeah, she's just a voice.
Amy Adams is the other one that's
in it for like a minute or so.
Yeah.
And Spike Jonze is mostly known for his music videos and kind of being like way out of the box for his ideas. Like he did the Fatboy Slim. Where they're all doing like the, you know, praise you. He did a lot of weird stuff. Did he do Blink? I don't know if he's ever done Blink.
But I don't know if he has.
He does a lot of interesting things. He's done a lot of weird commercials lately. He did one for like Sonos or something like that was like real crazy. They're like, I don't know, if you want an acid trip, get Spike. He'll do. He will succeed.
I mean, yeah, I knew he had a background in music videos. So, you know, I figured it was natural that he was directing this. But like I said, I think I was expecting more of a, it was like a traditional type of documentary than I. So I was kind of surprised by the, it's almost like a concert movie, except like you said, it's like a TED Talk.
Yeah, I think in general, like they're not the most comfortable, and I feel like it has something to do with Adam Yauch not being there. But yeah, it's out of their element a little bit. They're normally like, I don't know, it's way more somber than I think what they're used to. And I still would recommend, like, if you find anything in this movie interesting, to definitely check out the audiobook. Because for the most part, these are people that are entertainers, like I think Will Smith, John C. Reilly, and stuff, like people that are kind of used to giving you some sort of presentation. And maybe these guys are like, I don't know, maybe they're a little rusty in the beginning, but I kind of do have like a personal attachment to the stories. But I guess I'll let Chuck give his opinion first. I don't want to be talking everyone's ear off.
Hey, it's your pick. You can mm-hmm. talk as much as you want. I would say I definitely agree with you. I like watching the change. And I think like one of the best quotes in the movie was when Mike D brings up that, you know, they had like all their very like misogynistic lyrics on like some of their early stuff, but then they were like writing things about respecting women, and like someone asking Ad Rock, like, oh, it sounds like you're a hypocrite. And he's like, well, I'd rather be a hypocrite than the same person for 30 years, which mm-hmm. is like definitely made me think of like kind of the more like, I guess, like, I don't want to say like innocent things of like people trying to get people like kicked out of something, like someone like James Gunn, like just for like tweeting bad jokes 10 years ago, like felt like something like that, like people trying to like catch them and be like, oh, but you said girls are only good for doing laundry in 1987. And he's like, yeah, I mean, I changed. And they're like, all right, I guess. So definitely felt like there were some connections to, you know, some other figures that have maybe had the same reaction that they have of, you know, they try to change, try to do better, and maybe people try to ignore them or don't care as much. I would agree, though. I guess I would say I agree with James. It might not be – it's not going to be everyone's favorite thing, and I think that comes down to the style. You do have to be kind of, like, already – invested in this to care, because it's, I mean, for 2 hours they're trying to give you their entire history of over, you know, 30 years worth of memories and stories. You kind of already have to know a lot of that going into it to kind of understand the context. I mean, they give you the info, they give you some context, but you do have to be kind of invested to begin with.
Yeah, and I think in general, like, the audiobook runs maybe like 16, 18 hours, and this is 2 hours, and a big like 30 minutes of it is footage. So I think the big bonus to having the movie is to be able to see some of the footage and some of the stuff that they were talking about, like the Cookie Puss commercial. I thought they were just trying to be crude. I never realized that Cookie Puss was like a legit thing that was being sold at a bakery. They don't describe that well in the movie, but they have a song called Cookie Puss where they're just like harassing this person, like a prank call. But this bakery had a character named Cookie Puss. I love that I've got to say this so many times on this episode already. And they had like different themes. I guess they'd have like a Christmas Cookie Puss and like a Valentine's Day Cookie Puss to buy. But I watching this movie and there's a commercial and you actually see Cookie Puss. I'm like, he actually had a fucking TV commercial. Like they advertised it there. No, I mean, I actually agree with Chuck. My favorite quote is the one where Mike Mike D paraphrases Ad-Rock. So I don't know what the real quote is, but yeah, I'd rather be a hypocrite than the same person forever. And I know when they did their first album, License to Ill, they essentially did their what do they call it? Like the first gangster rap album with like they made up a story essentially. These aren't the people they were. You know, talking about going down the street and like shooting people and stuff like that. That is like when you look at them, clearly they're not doing any of those things. But yeah, I mean, it's pretty shitty what they do to Kate Schellenbach. That's in a part of the original group, and kind of like push her away. And yeah, like a lot of their songs are kind of crude towards women, and then it like changes kind of fast too. Like I think and I would agree with how they don't like the frat boy crowd that they ended up getting with the Fight for Your Right, which is honestly probably one of my least favorite songs.
It like, I don't know, that part I did like, and it's also so in character that they make that song to make fun of the frat boy crowd, and the frat boy crowd ends up embracing it and loving it. I'm like, that is such a, like, it's such an obvious twist, and also like so in character for that group. So I thought that was pretty funny.
And then they essentially become the frat boys and are sick of themselves.
Yeah. It is kind of a, you know, that is like a classic rise to fame story, you know, where like, you know, they get it and then they kind of, you know, end up not liking themselves.
Yeah. Or whether like whenever they were trying to make their second album, and they're like, if we have to make Fight for Your Right Part 2, we'll do it. Whatever we have to do to get out there and make some more shit.
That was a great moment with the guy that was like the president of Capitol Records, like trying to sound hip and cool, like while talking about the Beastie Boys, like,
oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
These three young men, they're real hip and cool with it these days, as they say. And I'm just like, oh my god.
The one thing I thought that you would appreciate, James, I'm sure you do. I like how they talk about how they weren't really into wrestling, but they got into wrestling through Rick Rubin. And then they felt like they kind of took on like those wrestling personalities, like in the beginning when they were going on tour. They're like, we weren't these people. We were just playing villains.
Yeah, I did appreciate that. And that's like, you know, a thing about, you know, they say with wrestling, you know, if you're going to play a character in wrestling, the best characters are just yourself with the volume turned way, way up. And that definitely seemed like what they're doing with their, you know, kind of embracing this wrestling heel persona. They're just kind of turning up the volume on themselves. So I did like that part.
I also like, too, how they talk about whenever they went over to MCA's apartment. And he had the tape-to-tape reel that was, like, going around to everything in the room. And it was playing the beginning of When the Levee Breaks by Led Zeppelin. Mm-hmm. Because to see it, like, I mean, there's not a lot going on in this movie outside of the clips. So it was kind of nice to see them, like, recreate, like, a prop, essentially. Some crazy shit.
Yeah, yeah, that's something that I guess is something, like, I almost wanted more of, like, and I don't know, maybe like I almost want to see like an extended version of this, something that incorporates
like a Dick in a Box or something.
Yeah, you know, something, because there's clearly, obviously, from like the bloopers at the end where they had like the extra like special guests that were like in the audience, like there's obviously stuff that was cut that they didn't just, you know, run the entire show front to back. Like I could imagine this show, like actually watching it live, is probably closer to like 3 hours or something like that, but they cut it down to make it like manageable, or like cut out like dead space and stuff like that. And like that was something I think like would have been interesting, like every once in a while, like some sort of like odd prop, like, yeah, like you were saying, like roll out the six pack of Budweiser, like DJ stand or something, and just like have that there, like just kind of like odd stuff like that to like, I guess just something to like engage more, I guess, to say like the way that James puts it. So it's not just a static like PowerPoint, like the just two guys standing in front of a screen, like to actually bring out like some sort of prop that connects back to like the real world and makes it like more tangible.
It sounds more like that's kind of what I almost envisioned it being, essentially, probably because it was Spike Jones. Maybe more like sets or something that would be pushed in and like moved around. Yeah, it's clearly not that. I don't know if it was logistic reasons or what the hell happened, or maybe it was just so experimental. He was just gonna work with the footage, whatever he had, because the most Spike Jones thing is the end of the movie, like during the credits, where he just starts cutting stuff together. Like, man, okay, are you gonna wash that dog forever? And
we already washed that dog.
Yeah, we already washed that dog, man.
What's that about? Just over and over again.
Well, then you talked about it being longer, and clearly it was, because there was like they did three separate sketches of a famous actor standing up in the audience and being like basically hounding them on Paul's Boutique, the second album that they had. Yeah, which I think was really funny. And I kind of really did want to see what the hell the thing was with Michael K. Williams with
I don't know, him dressed as Bob Dylan.
Yeah, like it was really fucking strange.
Like that, yeah, that was one of those things that when I saw that, I was like, what was that? Like, yeah, I want to see that as like a full on thing.
Well, I'll say this, like one of the reasons that I do appreciate this is, and I yeah, maybe knowing the stories hurts me a little bit, but like I am worried with what a movie would be if they made like a biopic. I thought like Straight Outta Compton turned out pretty well, but then there's like a lot of like what All Eyes on Me. Chuck, you saw that, right?
I never did watch it.
Like,
never got around to it.
It seems like the odds are not in the favor of any of these things turning out well or like actually being a good movie.
It's hard to, that's the problem. I mean, it's kind of the problem you run into even with this movie is, I mean, it's hard to condense somebody's entire life into 2 hours. It's like, that's why some biopics work better when it's just like one specific, like key moment in their life or something like that. Or like, I know that's what they did with the Steve Jobs one, where it was like three specific moments in his life. They didn't just try to do like his entire life story, but they tried to pick like
very specific moments.
Yeah, but they like they tried to fit it in like that. But it's like that's Bohemian Rhapsody. They have like that issue of they just kind of like will rearrange things for dramatic effect and don't really care like whether that's true or not. They're just like, there's like, yeah, this happened this time, and people
that's
are like
a prime example like 10 years later. Of like Bohemian Rhapsody was like decent recreations of things, but like you can fucking watch the Live Aid concert, so who really cares how great and realistic that looks? But there was so much cheese in that movie that I'm like, things didn't happen that way. There's no way. Like whenever they're at the concert and the tape's like, don't push the volume up past this point, and they're like a rebellious and they do it. Or when they're fighting and I can't remember who he's playing, but Pippin or whatever from Lord of the Rings starts like playing the beat for Another One Bites the Dust, and then they totally stop fighting and they're like, that's great, and they start working on the song, and I'm like, yeah, that's totally how that happened.
I haven't seen Bohemian Rhapsody, so this, you could be making this up right now. But I think it's probably why I liked Rocket Man so much, because Rocket Man really mostly focused on Elton John's like rise and his, you know, battle with addiction. But also it like, even though it's based on, you know, a true story, it's doesn't really, you know, take place in reality. Like it's a very surreal sort of fantastical version of his life. While also just detailing a portion of his career, which is, you know, like the first half of it, I'd say.
Rocket Man is very good, and I kind of feel like it. I mean, if they did a Beastie Boys movie kind of in that realm, where they kind of like broke the fourth wall, kind of like had that fantasy version of like what's going on inside the head. So like it was a little bit of a music video on top of it.
You're reminding me of Fight for Your Right Revisited.
Yeah.
Like, cause that's how I would want it cast, with like Elijah Wood and Seth Rogen and Danny McBride.
And then they play, then what was it? John C. Reilly and Will Ferrell.
John like C. Reilly, Will Ferrell, and Jack Black are the old versions of them.
Yeah, if you want to watch a good video, that's probably the last good video.
Yeah, that's like a whole short film. It's like half an hour long from their last album they did right before MCA died.
Yeah, I mean, there's a ton of good stories that don't even make it into this movie. Essentially, like their last album's Hot Sauce Committee Part 2, and there was a Hot Sauce Committee Part 1. They were working on Hot Sauce Committee, and they said they had like maybe 10, 12 songs or something, and then they lost the hard drive with that. So they had to start from scratch, and that's why it's Part 2. So there are songs maybe out there somewhere. Maybe somebody has them. Maybe they're in a dump because somebody didn't know what the hell it was. And they said they were working. There's a lot more songs that they worked on together, but they just don't want to put them out. They just don't feel right putting them out.
I didn't know that, but I don't really know much about them. I did really like when Sabotage kicked in, because I always think of Star Trek because I'm a fucking nerd.
Which one?
The first one, even though it serves a story purpose in the third one, which I appreciated. But yeah, I still always think of 2009 Star Trek when I hear it.
Yeah, I know J.J. Abrams is a huge Beastie Boys fan. And yeah, 2009 version starts with Sabotage. Oh, what was the second movie? Just a reference? They might have had music on for a little bit, I think.
I think there was definitely a reference in there somewhere, but I don't remember what it was in that movie.
Yeah, I've only watched it once. But in the third one, I did think it was so brilliant when they used it to basically defeat the enemy. And they did do it in a funny way. Maybe it was just Simon Pegg really pulling off, like, oh, let's play the classics.
I like that moment because, like, you know, I love Star Trek, but in old Star Trek, you know, I'm talking like Dexter HD, Space Nine, Voyager, like whenever they listen to music, it's always like classical, like our classical music, like Beethoven and stuff like that. That like that's all they listen to. So I really appreciated in 09 and Into Darkness where they're listening to Beastie Boys and they're like, oh, classical music, because, you know, hundreds of years into the future, that kind of probably would be their classical music.
Fuck, after 10 years there, it's classic rock anymore.
yeah, but I did appreciate that because it's like, I really love Star Trek, but like Star Trek, you know, anytime they reference art, it's always like the classics. It's always like Shakespeare or like classical literature or like classical music. And the 2009 movies have them referencing like sort of contemporary, you know, stuff that's to us is contemporary, but to them, you know, is kind of ancient news. But it still exists in the Star Trek world. So I appreciated that little detail about both of them.
And Beyond is another reason that I think that I like that the way that they use Sabotage in it is because I went in kind of like, fuck, where are they going to put the Beastie Boys in this movie? And the way that it was actually played into the movie, I was like, I couldn't have done it better. They really couldn't have done
that. Yeah, yeah. I was like, oh, it's really cool that they, you know, bring a full circle to the first film, but also make sure that it serves a story purpose, too. I'm like, clever.
But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. Maybe one day we'll get a Beastie Boys. I always thought, like, maybe that's something I would want to do if I could do a biopic. And I'm like, nah, just fuck it up. I think it would just fuck it up bad.
Musical biopics are big now, so maybe we'll get a chance.
Yeah, but and then if you're thinking about it, like what did you find to be like the most interesting part of their lives? I wasn't as interested in like the beginning of their lives so much.
I kind of liked that, you know, when they're younger, they're just meeting each other and they're like getting involved in like the punk scene. I did find that really interesting. You know, just kind of like finding out like how they kind of, you know, establish their taste.
I do like how they describe how cool Adam Yauch was when they first met him. They're like, he's wearing a trench coat. Oh, so yeah. Cool. I'm like, he literally looks like a school shooter. But
Yeah.
I saw something online the other day, too, that was like a person in a trench coat. And they're like, why don't men dress like this anymore? I'm like, because they look creepy now.
Yeah, remember?
I think it was Kyle Reese from Terminator. They're like, why don't men dress like this anymore? I'm like, just people be afraid of them.
Yeah, it's true. Remember when, like, after The Matrix, nerds everywhere tried pulling off the trench coat and shades look? And it just, no one could pull it off, like in The Matrix, because The Matrix is a movie.
I don't want to, like, rag on this person because they're my friend. But, like, for 15 years, like, later, they wore a trench coat and a cowboy hat. And I'm like, come on. It's a look, but it's not doing you justice. They'll know exactly who it is because they did it for 15 years. They're like, you son of a bitch, Justin. Yeah, but, like, I don't know what my favorite album is. Like, I really do. Chuck's favorite is Hello Nasty.
It's a great one.
It has a lot of good songs in it. It probably is the best album, mainly because I think Intergalactic is my favorite song. It might be their most popular song too, I think. But
I still think it's Sabotage.
You think Sabotage is their number one song?
I think Sabotage is probably their number one. It's the most recognizable, like, to people that, like, don't know anything about the Beastie Boys. Like, the fact that it was in Star Trek even probably helped boost it with people that didn't even know what that was.
It's in everything. I just saw, like, a trailer for some animated movie with pets, and they were playing Sabotage.
I'd probably agree with Chuck, because I know, like, three Beastie Boys songs, and one of them is Sabotage, and I know it because of Star Trek.
The other one, Intergalactic?
Yeah.
Intergalactic, okay.
Yeah, so, that and Fight for Your Right to Party. I'd probably say Intergalactic Planetary and then Sabotage, because I noticed that Sabotage has gotten a lot more use and traction over the past couple years. And I don't want to say it's because of its usage in Star Trek, but that might be part of it.
Yeah, it might be. I don't know, because it has been popping up all over the place, and it's like, is there a discount on using Sabotage or something? Also, according to this documentary, it really seems to be their comeback song. You know, from Fright to Your Right, a couple years later, Sabotage was the big one.
Mm-hmm.
But, I just generally like how their style changes from album to album. I do like Paul's Boutique. I think it is great. I agree with MCA. I think it's a much better album than License to Ill. And it is funny to be like, I don't know, like, I thought we were making the greatest thing ever, and, no one gave a shit about it. But, I know they were doing it. That was the first thing they did kind of on their own. I think maybe I'm confusing it with one of their other albums. But they put out there, like, if you buy our album on cassette, we'll send you all the lyrics. And then I guess they had way more people buy the cassette than they thought. This might be like the third. This might be like Check Your Head or something. And they were like just scrambling to make all that stuff and put it out there. But it goes way more beyond the stage. They had a magazine for a couple years for some reason. They kind of get slightly into Adam Yauch's Tibetan journey and kind of just getting out there and discovering things in the world. It's kind of weird that it's them. What was the one from like a couple when like To Check It Out came out?
To the Five Bros.
Yeah, when that came out, and they came out and they were like dads with like babies and stuff strapped to them.
Yeah.
That was back when Carson Daly was still on MTV doing, what was it, the top 10?
Oh, Total Request Live.
Mm-hmm.
I also enjoy the that they still commit to the bit in the whole presentation of Nathaniel Hornblower MCA's Swiss uncle who directs all their music videos, which is just like, I mean,
what bit? What are they sticking to?
That they still just don't even like. They don't even like bring up in the Beastie Boys movie of like, oh yeah, MCA loved to dress up as his uncle. Like they still just present it as
if that's not
MCA. Like they still just make that joke.
I thought that was his real uncle.
I know. When he interrupted Michael Stipe at the VMAs, that accent was like 100% authentic. But hey, how many other people can say that they started out as a punk rock bass player turned rapper, and technically MCA is part of the Criterion Collection because their videos were released by the Criterion Collection, and he's the director, so he's got films alongside, you know, Orson Welles and you know, Charlie Chaplin. So I'd say that's quite an accomplishment.
Yeah, that is true. He was really, I think he worked along with Criterion Collection in the beginning. Like he was doing like interview stuff. Like he was into it.
Yeah, he definitely seems like he's, I mean, obviously the fact that he was directing, like, it seems like he was a pretty big, like, film guy.
But yeah, he's just like, I don't know. I find it admirable the way he was just able to, like, pick up anything and kind of do anything. I'm like the guy that, like, I can't do anything. How did he do that?
I liked,
good.
Speaking of movies, you know, the one member's failed attempt at acting.
Yeah, that was a great movie.
Yeah,
in that one movie, whatever the hell it was called.
Yeah. As I say, his reaction,
a couple more times.
His reaction to, you know, driving into the pole, just
Yeah, he's like, I don't know, I've never driven into a pole before, but I don't think I'd have that reaction. You have like an orgasm when you hit the water or something. Yeah, he I know he's Ad Rock has been in a couple things. Was he in like whose movie was he? He was in a movie.
I think he's been in a movie with Ben Stiller. I don't know if it was one by Noah Baumbach or something.
Yeah, he was in like he's done small roles. Like he's just like a guy that's there getting coffee or something. But yeah, I mean, I feel like they kind of redeemed themselves over the course of the story too, because like if you only ever listen to Beastie Boys from License to Ill, like, would you really care? Would you really want to know more about the Beastie Boys if that was that? I doubt it. But I did like the Horrible Horowitz thing too. I like how they like talked them up like being the worst people in the world.
Yeah, that was a good moment. That was a weird thing. That seems to specifically be, I don't know, just in the UK, because that was something that they did with Tyler the Creator. They like said because his lyrics were too violent and homophobic. They were like, so they wouldn't let him come into the country like at all. And I was like, oh, they've been doing this apparently since the 80s with with the Beastie Boys.
I like it. What was that news headline that was like they harassed like disabled kids or something?
Yeah, mocks disabled children or something.
They're like, we definitely never did that. Yeah, I mean, they're just people. And it's just like one of those stories that I don't know. I don't know what it is. Obviously, I never started a band. I did start a podcast.
You did.
There were
four
members, and now there's just three.
Three is a good number.
There's a raw style to it. We're three white boys.
Yeah, I mean, that's about where the similarities end. Yeah, I mean, we did pause for a while and then come back to it like the Beastie Boys did.
We have microphones.
We do.
Let's be honest, we're pretty much the Beastie Boys.
Are we boys entering anarchistic? Sorry, I can't say anarchistic states towards internal excellence. Is that what we are?
I like their description. It was right off the bat when the B stood for boys, and the boys is already in the title. It's a dumb name and it's redundant.
Yeah, it didn't really make a lot of sense. I do like the story too, where they were playing with Aerosmith, where well, not all of them, but MCA was up there on the bass playing, and I just like the imagery of like him trying to play back to back with Joe Perry.
Yeah.
And it's like, who's this dirty, like, drunk guy? Like, can you get him off the stage? Like, why is he playing with us? But yeah, it's super depressing that it is kind of depressing. Like, these guys are the closest people to Adam Yauch, and then to just have him like not in your life anymore. Well, I guess, you know, not have anybody in your life, but somebody that was like maybe one of the most impactful people in their lives. Like, they don't seem like they would have done any of this stuff without him.
Yeah, he definitely came off like, you know, sort of the glue and the driving force behind a lot of it. But like, you know, it, in the same sense, like it's nice to see, you know, a story about, you know, a band and a group of people, but they're and the fact that like they don't, you know, usually a lot of times with bands like this, there's usually like a big falling out, you know, they all go their separate ways. And it was nice to see a story where, you know, they all remain friends, you know, throughout the story. And, you know, unfortunately, one is taken away, you know, because he passes away. But, you know, the fact that they're, you know, pretty much together up until that point, I think is, you know, it's a very, like, sweet, you know, side of this story.
That's how I hope the Cinema de More story ends. Sweet.
They're very sweet. We're all friends. Hopefully none of us die prematurely.
Yeah, I don't want that to happen at all. But I'm probably the opposite of the glue. Everyone's like, why do I still do this with him? Oh, God. Hopefully not. No, I mean, probably,
you're,
but hopefully.
You're the heart of the podcast. You're the glue. Like, without you, this would all fall apart.
And we've been doing this remotely, so you're probably, like, strangling yourself with, like, a cord right now.
No, I'm pretty good. I, you know, doing it remotely means I just have to fight off my cats because I record in my kitchen.
I don't know if I shared it with you, but it was like getting ready for your Zoom call and the guy had his cat like taped to the wall.
Yeah. You sent me that. Yeah.
And that's a podcast. Well, mine the other day was like on the very last episode that we did, dogs are downstairs, they've eaten and everything, and Steph started to take a shower at the same time that I was recording, and Smokey just starts wailing and wailing and wailing. I'm like, come on, Smokey, you don't have a person for like 15 minutes and then they're going to be down there. Can't control anything. I need to like go off somewhere, like I need like a little shed or something I can go into and record silently.
You need a studio like the Beastie Boys.
I know, like a cat. Yeah, that's what we need to do.
Build a really a skate ramp life. And a basketball hoop.
If we don't have a skate ramp and a basketball hoop, we're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
Steph would get scared if she saw the skate ramp because she knows how many like skateboarding videos and stuff I've been watching. I don't think it's like a midlife crisis because I don't think I'm going to get on a skateboard. I've been on a skateboard before, but I'm not good. I don't know if it's because I had a cheap skateboard, but I'd like to imagine it's because I was not good.
I mean, my parents bought me a skateboard and then never let me use it, so I've never been on a skateboard.
Mine was like, I could stay on the skateboard. I could go down a pretty steep hill on a skateboard, but like, I didn't know what to do when you got to the bottom. I just bailed and it hurt. Like, either that or like, I'd be going like pretty fast and I'd hit like, I don't know, a pebble and the wheel would like pop up and I like the skateboard would come to like a complete stop and I would keep going because that's how momentum works.
Yeah, I don't know. I asked for a skateboard one year for Christmas and they got me it. But then every time I tried to ride it, they like wouldn't let me because they thought I hurt myself. I'm like, so why did you buy me this?
Your house that I've been to before, is that the house that you grew up in? You were there your whole life?
Yes.
You were going to go down that hill on a skateboard? That's a pretty steep hill.
No, I wasn't going to go down that hill. No, I was going to start small.
That's like The Simpsons, where Bart's gonna jump over the Grand Canyon or something.
Oh yeah, the Springfield Canyon.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, holy shit, James. Your parents looked at that hill and looked at the skateboard and looked at you and were like, no.
I wanted to go to the park or like something, but they were like, oh no, you hurt yourself. So I'm like, so why did you buy me this? Like, you know.
Yeah. But that's even like this area too. There's like skate parks now, but growing up there weren't any skate parks. Like you'd watch a movie like Brink on Disney Channel and you'd be like, that looks cool, but we don't have cool outdoor schools. Picnic tables and stuff.
My grew up in Brentwood. There was like a big push from like a lot of the local youth to put in a skate park, and the borough like gave in. They're like, yeah, we'll build a skate park for you guys, and they like started it, and then like not even halfway through just gave up and just like left this half finished skate park sit for like literally years. They're like, well, we dug a hole and we have some mounds and there you go. And they just let it sit there. And I'm like, wow.
You know, it's one of those things where it's like, you really put in, you know, less than the bare minimum here.
I'll watch like a video too. And it's like a 9-year-old girl and she's grinding on everything and doing all these tricks. And I'm like, holy shit. I would just be lucky to stay on the goddamn. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I in a sense of like how Beastie Boys has always been kind of like they kind of have like a raw sound to them and they're kind of experimental when it switches up a little bit. I always kind of felt like our podcast was a little bit like that. Like it's a little bit messy, but hopefully people can still listen to it.
Yeah.
We don't have a Rick Rubin to clean it up though.
Yeah, we're messy and we're raw and, you know, we're indie, but that's the charm, hopefully. This is the time we're getting comments. This is the time we're getting feedbacks so and be like, fuck you, you're not.
I'm the worst. I'm my own worst critic, though. Like, even when I had done that episode on Nick's podcast about Beastie Boys, there was something I said. And when I was listening to it again, it was like one of those moments where, like, if I was talking to, like, you were Chuck, you would catch that I said it, and you're like, you said the wrong thing, Justin. And I'd be like, oh, fuck, yeah, I was thinking this, but I said that. But, you know, Nick didn't know, so he wasn't there to catch me. And I'm just, like, confidently say the wrong thing on the podcast. I can't even remember what it was. But it's stuff like that that eats me up.
No, I'm like that, too. I'm my own harshest critic, which I feel like you have to be if you're you know, if you're a creative in any way, I feel like you have to be, you know, pretty harsh on yourself.
Yeah. I mean, you do. I don't know. There's people that listen to this and they're like, I love it. I'm like, love it? All of us? Like, we're all good?
Even me?
Right. I hear what I sound like. You do. Like, you are listening to me, right? Yeah. Yeah, but I don't know. I enjoyed it. Maybe it's not necessarily what I would want, but I'm happy with what I got. Cause I really feel like if, Yauch was still alive and they were still making albums and stuff for years to come, they're not that old. They're in their 50s now. Yeah, I don't think you would see anything for a couple decades, honestly. Or they would sell out and become something really weird. I mean, I can't tell you how many Geico commercials I've seen with like old rap music now. Or like what Outkast Hey Ya is like I don't know, Mazda commercial or something.
Yeah, it's like you said, it's like classic rock now.
Yeah, that's awful. They're like, let's listen to some class. I think you brought up the Foo Fighters, and they were talking about how I think Blink-182 is one of them also. They're like, yeah, we're still playing, so we're also classic rock and new.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the thing is, like, you know, when I go to Blink concerts, you know, there's a pretty decent amount of people like my age there, but I'm still surprised at how many young people are there.
but like, you know, this watching this documentary, you know, like I said, I wasn't that into it, but I was thinking about the time I was just like flipping through channels. I came across like a live Foo Fighters show, you know, and I like how much I loved like just sitting and watching this, you know, this, you know, live recorded Foo Fighters concert. And just kind of like the emotional, you know, roller journey that it took me on, because they're one of my favorite bands. And, you know, I kind of realized that's probably why you like this so much, why fans of Beastie Boys, you know, love this so much. I think it really does depend on your attachment to the band.
Yeah. It's interesting too, because it's like, now what are they doing? I know Mike D has like his own channel with Apple, and he discovers like a lot of good music. And I know Ad-Rock basically is like, you know, I don't really listen to anything new anymore. I listened to everything new back when I was 20, didn't listen to anything old. So I would recommend like going back and listen to the classics and stuff. But Mike D is still on that like that road of discovery, like whatever cool, anything that he finds cool, he wants to share with people. And I don't know. I feel like that's kind of like me. I'm like, we got to talk about this. We got to see this.
Yeah. And, you know, I absolutely know that feeling too, of like just wanting to share something you love or something you find cool or interesting with other people. And I know it sucks too when, you know, you share it with people and they don't enjoy it the way you do. That's why I felt bad when I was watching this and I was like, oh God, I'm so bored. Because I know how much
you feel bad. Yeah. But I don't go out of my way to torture people. Like, I'm not like, yeah. I don't pick things. I pick things that like generally I'm like, oh, that'd be interesting to talk about.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a little bit of a cheat for me too, because I wanted to talk about the Beastie Boys, and we don't talk about music, so.
Yeah, it's true. It's mostly movies.
So I cheated. I cheated the whole game.
Well, you know, nothing wrong with that. We could make the rules.
We could break them too, but well, we're supposed to be like TV too, but have we even touched television? I guess Muppet Family Christmas is television.
Yeah, I guess Muppets. But I think the last time we, other than that, that we touched TV, it was Twin Peaks, The Return.
And that wasn't even technically this podcast. That was the old podcast.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Got a lot of stuff that we can revisit. But yeah, I don't know. I'm like rearing the go, I guess, with our 6 months that we had off. And kind of finding our groove again.
Yeah, you know,
it was like a little rough in the beginning.
Yeah, yeah, it's like we're new all over again.
But yeah, I think, I don't know, we got good things to come.
We do,
yeah.
You get to say everything you wanted to, Chuck. I'm the loud one.
I know you're the loud one. We already know. Are you like, you're like defining your role if we were the Beastie Boys? You're like, well, I'm the loud one, so.
Yeah, and you would be the quiet one, and James would be the heartthrob, I think.
that's flattering.
We're me and Chuck are based on our loudness, and you're just the heartthrob.
Well,
what was that thing on MTV, Together to Get Her?
Yeah, remember that? Yeah, I remember that.
I don't.
It was a movie about being a boy band, yeah. And they literally had to find people that fit roles, like
mockumentary, like, and it was like, yeah, it was like the cute one.
You have to be the one that's dying, that's like sick and dying.
Yeah.
Who, not a fun fact, actually was sick and dying, the actor that played the sick and dying one, and died.
I missed all this. I have no idea what any of this is.
MTV in like the 90s started doing like MTV movies. Mm-hmm. Made for TV movies, and that was like their second one. Obviously they didn't keep doing them.
Yeah, it wasn't a hit,
but though they had an album and everything, like, yeah. They were legit.
It was in like that weird time where like they still kind of played music videos sometimes, but they weren't full on, just like reality TV. There's like right in that middle spot where it was just like, we don't know what we do. We're music television, but we don't know what we do.
Hey, and that's where I grew up. It wasn't like the heyday of music television where it was just music videos.
Yeah, you were like,
but there's still more music videos.
Like when the Beastie Boys are like, I saw my music video play 6 times in an hour. I'm like, man, you're lucky if MTV would even play 6 videos for an entire day.
Well, like TRL is a prime example. They would do like a world premiere where you got to watch the entire video of something and then never again. Like, it would be like whatever, and then Carson Daly would start talking over your song and be like, yeah, that's it. It's number 2.
Yeah, it gives like 10 seconds of it. And then everything else was just like interviews with random people.
Yeah. Jennifer Lopez is here today, so we're not going to be showing much music videos.
They tried to bring TRL back a little while ago. It didn't survive. People, I think that format just there was no way to bring that back. People were like, wait, you want to like show us videos like that I could watch on YouTube? Mm-hmm.
Well, that's even like when they did Beavis and Butthead revival, which it sounds like they're doing another one. But instead of doing music videos, they just did MTV shows. I think
they did like Jersey Shore and stuff and Teen Mom or something.
Yeah, it was like not as good at all. But I guess that's one way to work around not having the pay to do music videos.
Yeah, not having the music videos like to show at all because no one's making them.
I think they did one. They did. I'm trying to remember who they are. MGMT. They did one of their music videos where
it was the kids grabbing the kids. It was kids. Yeah.
Yeah, the song is Kids. Where they're like chasing children.
Yeah.
Great stuff. Great stuff.
Classic, yeah.
But yeah. Final thoughts? James-o?
I mean, I think I said what I said. You know, like I said, I wasn't really that into this documentary. But if you're a fan of the Beastie Boys or curious about them, want to know more about them, I think it's a good resource. And it's probably for you, but also just, you know, it also just come down to personal taste. You know, I think for me, just watching a PowerPoint documentary for like 2 hours was, just not my jam, but
I wish you just said what I said, mic drop.
I felt like giving a concluding paragraph, but yeah, so that's my thoughts on the Beastie Boys documentary.
Yeah, I would. I don't want to say maybe I'm somewhere in the middle. Like I can see James's point about it might not be what you're expecting. If you're thinking, you know, if you're hearing Beastie Boys movie, you're thinking more along the lines of movie. And again, I would definitely agree that the creativity of Spike Jonze just isn't there. Which is an odd. That's one thing. It definitely feels like this movie could have been directed by anybody. Like anybody could have just, you know, directed this. It's just a stage show. That's the one thing that I do wish. And like I said, I hope we get more. Maybe like they release something on Blu-ray or something that has all the extended things and maybe some of the creativity that looks like it was there but just got cut for some reason. Maybe that was somebody else's decision. Maybe Apple wasn't into the Michael K. Williams, Bob Dylan sketch and all that other stuff, so they cut stuff out and kind of made it more just your basic, like, hey, this was our life story. But I hope we get some more of that at some point in the future.
Yeah, from my general understanding, I guess they were kind of talked into doing the book, writing the book, and they didn't really know if it was the right thing to do, but they were kind of like convinced otherwise. And I feel like maybe the same thing kind of happened with Spike Jonze's idea of doing it kind of like a stand-up special. But hey, it's not funny. It's just, it's your life story. It's as funny as you can make it funny. That kind of thing. I feel like that's kind of, and I feel like he didn't want to be very invasive. That's why it doesn't really have that Spike Jonze feel to it. But I would absolutely love, like, if Criterion would, like, upgrade the the anthology music video set that they did, and like maybe include this as like a bonus of some sort of like a complete package.
Yeah, like,
but for the,
yeah,
go ahead.
Like I said, I don't know. It almost feels like, yeah, maybe it was like a budget thing. Like I would have even, like some of their stories feel like they also lend themselves well to like doing a, I don't know, something like animated, like when they talk about like, oh yeah, there was weird, like when they talk about Curtis Blow doing breakdancing, like if they would have had someone like animating Curtis Blow breakdancing in Russell Simmons' office or something like that, like things like that, just even like small things. But maybe it was a budget thing that they cut things out or weren't willing to pay for certain things.
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe it was Apple. 'Cause I think this whole thing was Apple like producing it.
Yeah.
But I do know that the book has like comic strips and shit in it.
Yeah,
and like, exactly. There's a cookbook in it. It's like all over the place. It's a Booyabaisse.
Yeah.
It's one of their songs. It's a good one. Long one. But yeah, I mean, like Chuck said, I think the accurate description is Beastie Boys story and not Beastie Boys movie. But yeah, I liked it, and I don't know, like it. Yeah, it's more, it's closer to maybe going to the bar with somebody and them just talking to you, and that might not be your thing. And but I found it interesting. Like I was able, obviously, very clearly able to relate, and I kind of appreciate it for what it was, because like I've watched a ton of Bob Dylan and Beatles documentaries, and like, not that they're all the same thing, but they're mostly like about like the history of the Beatles, but like no Beatles really telling the story. It's just like how they became the sensation and what everyone thought about them, and you know, they'll get all the way up to like John Lennon's death and stuff, and it's just sort of like, I don't know, you don't have like that personal touch that like this has, because if, like I said, if Yauch was still around, they probably wouldn't have done anything like this. And essentially, what the music speaks for itself, the movie speaks for itself, you know, like everything we talk about movies, but at the end of the day, it's like, what did you feel when you saw it? But yeah, thanks for watching, guys.
Yeah.
Chuck, did you watch this before?
No, I missed, like, I had that free trial of Apple TV for upgrading my iPhone, and I never got around to it, so I had to spend $5 to get Apple TV again.
They extended my Apple TV for some reason. Yeah. Mine expires on like February 6 or something like that. And you know what's really funny? I watched, when did that trial start? Like, I don't know, October of 2019, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
And I watched the Beastie Boys story in April. And then I waited until January 2021 to watch the Beastie Boys story again. And then I saw that Wolfwalkers was on there. So I watched Wolfwalkers. And then my subscription's going to be up for like in the next couple weeks. It's like, you had it for a whole year. I watched one thing twice. And then an animated movie that looked pretty cool. And I did like the animated movie.
I heard it's good. I haven't watched it yet.
You know what's interesting about it? A 2020 movie with Sean Bean in it. Sean Bean.
Yeah.
Just like Possessor.
Yeah, as I say, he was in... we've seen him. You know, he's a Possessor.
Was he in anything else in 2020?
I don't know.
That's Sean Bean just popping up and shit. Mm-hmm. Well, he popped up in both movies. I didn't know that he was going to be a Possessor, and I didn't know he was in this.
It's always good to have a Sean Bean surprise.
It wasn't his voice, though. It was like in the beginning, he had a credit before I think he ever spoke. So I was like, Sean Bean's in this. That son of a bitch. But yeah, another episode of our podcast. Hopefully they are getting better. on Twitter. I'm at JJMorgan19. Where are you at, James?
I'm at James Reinhardt.
Chuck, where are you at?
ChuckFinn66.
I think this week we're going to have Chuck put up a seductive GIF.
A seductive GIF.
Yeah, he hasn't put up anything in years. I think he just needs to do one thing. Right. So check out his page to see what he thinks is seductive. That's it. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
Chuck, thank the people.
I did. James said thanks at the exact same time.
Oh.
He masked my thanks.
I'm sorry to talk over you, Chuck.
It's okay. It never happens.
I'm just not going to talk in the next episode. We are Cinema D'Amore. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter to stay up to date with news and information on upcoming episodes. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Podbean, Spotify, Amazon Music, Audible, Pandora, Alexa, or iHeartRadio. It would be greatly appreciated if you subscribe to our podcast on your platform of choice. We also appreciate feedback, so rate us, review us, and let us know what you think. And above all else, thank you for listening.
Man, we already watched that dog already.
You don't have to get mad at me.
We watched
you. Yo, what's up, man? You can't watch dogs for the rest of your life, man.
Let's go on tour, man. Let's go do some shows.
Oh, baby.
You had Durock. Let's go, man.
Yo, man. Yo, come on, man.
Joey, come on, hey, Paisano. We got a gig. Let's go.
Yo, Mike. Let's go, man.
Come on, man. We got work to do.
Word, man. It's time to get ill, man.
Run DMC and the Beastie Boys together forever.
Here we go. It's treats to fight. For your right. No. Sleep.
I'm the king of rock. The hit none higher. Sucker MCs should call me Sire.
Kick it.
Party people. Run DMC and the Beastie Boys are on their way to your town right now. And we're going to be cold kicking live. Ain't that right, fellas? Yeah.